camp and scores of more civilians are the latest victims of Israel's campaign of genocide. Iran slams Israel's recent attacks on its embassy in Syria, calling the regime's irresponsible actions a real threat to regional and international peace and security. And Iraq's Islamic Resistance carries out more operations in support of Gaza, hitting 5 Israeli targets in occupied territories, including an oil port and an airbase. Palestinians are witnessing endless spiral of death and destruction in Gaza, where U.S.-Israeli genocide is now in its 7th month. Israeli aircraft and artillery continue pounding various parts of Gaza, targeting homes and gatherings of displaced Palestinians, killing over 30 people in the past 24 hours. Now, the mayor of Al-Maghazi refugee camp and several others were killed when the Israeli regime forces hit the camp in central Gaza. And to the south, horrors continue even after occupation forces have left the city of Khan Yunis on Sunday. So far, 84 bodies have been recovered from under rubble. Palestinian medical sources say regimes also significantly damaged the city's hospital. Since the start of the U.S.-Israeli campaign of genocide in Gaza on October 7th, over 33,200 people have been killed, and nearly 2 million others out of 2.5 million Gaza population have been internally displaced. Iran's ambassador to the UN says Israeli crimes are a real threat to regional and international peace. Emir Said Irvani slammed as a disgrace and flagrant violation of the UN Charter Israel's recent terrorist attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus. He expressed regret the Security Council failed to condemn that attack. Irvani said Israel is committing such violations with impunity, and this is a challenge to the legitimacy of international law. Elsewhere, he pointed to U.S. role in Israel's campaign of genocide in Gaza, saying atrocities could not have taken place without Washington's full support. He said the U.S. has been playing what he called a hypocritical game of pressure and blackmail by frequently vetoing Security Council resolutions calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. The Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement says Iran has every right to retaliate to a recent Israeli attack on its Syria embassy.
In the end, the Americans have come to the conclusion that there will be a reaction. Even the Israelis, they have come to this conclusion. They have recognized that there will be, I think the whole world has, that this is a natural right for Iran, and that it's normal for the Islamic Republic to go ahead with such a retaliation. But of course, everyone's waiting what will happen and the repercussions of what will happen.
Nasrallah made the comments in a ceremony held to commemorate Iranian Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, killed along with a number of his companions in that Damascus attack. Hezbollah chief said Israel's stupidity in attacking the embassy made the U.S. president press Israel to stop its Gaza onslaught. Nasrallah said Israel's achieved nothing on the ground in Gaza in the past 6 months and has no choice but to stop its genocidal war. Nasrallah also cited Israel's deteriorating situation in the world and its isolation due to its flagrant aggression against Palestinians. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has paid a visit to the Syrian capital as part of his regional tour. The Iranian diplomat has met with high-ranking Syrian officials, including the president and foreign minister. We discussed with our guests earlier the significance of his Syria trip in our news review program.
It is time for the news review. Well, the Iranian foreign minister has met with high-ranking Syrian officials in Damascus on the second leg of his regional tour. In a presser with his Syrian counterpart, Faisal Maqdad, the Iranian minister said Tehran's response to the Israeli terrorist attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus is definite. He held the United States responsible for the assault, saying Washington's refusal to condemn the terrorist act proves its complicity. Touching upon the Israeli crimes in Gaza, the Iranian minister said the unfolding developments in the war-ridden strip are indicative of a profound confusion and division within the Israeli regime. He reiterated that his country will continue all-out efforts to put an end to the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Amir Abdullahian is in Damascus as part of his regional tour. He has also met with the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. During the visit, the Iranian diplomat also inaugurated a new consular section for the Iranian embassy. I'd like to welcome to this news review our guest, Gisoo Misha Ahmadi, who is in Damascus, and Shabir Rezvi, political analyst out of London. Well, thank you both for being with us. Let me start it off with Gisoo. Gisoo, will fill us in on this tour in general and what has taken place.
Well, Marzia, this was a very important regional tour and a very important visit by the foreign minister to Damascus at this point in time. And Marzia, I would like to draw our viewers' attention to the fact that the timing of this visit is very important, and in and of itself, it sends a very strong message to those who attacked the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Well, in the words of Mr. Amir Abdullahian himself, because he considers the United States responsible for that, without the logistics information that the Americans would provide the Israelis, this attack would not have been possible, and particularly with the go-ahead of the U.S., this without that, it would not have been possible. So, Marzia, this sends a very strong message that Iran is adamant in keeping its stance, its position in supporting the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian people, its stance regarding a strong demand for a ceasefire in Gaza, and of course for the rights of the Palestinian people to be recognized on an international scale. Now, what's even more important makes it very significant, Marzia, because I have traveled with the foreign minister many, many times. On this trip, his family is also accompanying. So that is also another sign that Iran is not afraid, and it is taking the same stance that it's always had regarding being an advocate for the Palestinian cause and, of course, the axis of resistance.
Okay. Well, Shabir, your thoughts, you heard our correspondent there and talking about the significance of this tour. I also want to reiterate what the Iranian foreign minister, Amir Abdullahian, talked about when he not only said the Israeli regime will pay for what it has done, but he also talked about the United States and its complicity, and basically saying that they will have to pay a price too. Your understanding of what all of this means?
Thanks very much for the invitation. Look, at the end of the day, all crimes that are committed on this planet are really at the behest of the United States of America. USA has fought wars, invaded countries, assassinated leaders since the Second World War virtually every year. This is all recorded history. And we can see that the last, you know, we are 6 months into the genocide taking place in Gaza. If America did not want that to happen, it would not have happened. They have, you know, on the one hand, they talk about humanitarian aid, you know, providing more sustenance to the people in the besieged territory, but at the same time, continue to supply armaments. So it's, as I've commented previously, these are all weasel words that USA uses to hoodwink the world into thinking that they're trying to do good. So coming back to the issue of the bombing of the consulate in Damascus, of course, a nod and a wink may have been given by Washington. There's no doubt at all. Otherwise, the Zionist entity wouldn't have the audacity to bomb an embassy. And it's the first time this has happened in history that a nation has bombed an embassy, a sovereign part of a country in a third country. It's quite unique that the red lines that the Zionist entity has continued to cross without any repercussions. And that, I think, is because what USA does is give its complete support without really any kind of reprimand. One hears that, yes, words, they're going to do this, X, Y, Z. But the easy task is, tomorrow, if USA decides not to send any armaments and any money to the Zionist entity, the whole sort of arrogance of the Zionist politicians and the 98% of the public who are with this so-called right-wing government in Israel would really have to change their mind dramatically.
Okay, now, and on that note, sorry to interrupt you, but I have to go. I appreciate both of you being with me on this news review. Gisu Ahmadi in Damascus and Shabir Rezvi, political analyst out of London.
Iraqi resistance groups say they've carried out fresh military operations against five vital Israeli targets in retaliation for regime's massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. Islamic Resistance in Iraq says its targets hit include the Ascalon oil port and the Hatzair air base in the city of Bir Saba. The umbrella resistance group also vowed to continue targeting enemy strongholds. In recent months, Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a series of attacks against Israeli targets. It's also hit U.S. military bases in both Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's complicity in Israel's campaign of genocide. Hamas has called on countries throughout the world to follow the example of Nicaragua and South Africa in taking action against Gaza genocide committed by Israel with Western support. In a statement, Hamas expressed appreciation for the case filed by Nicaragua against Germany at the International Court of Justice, which says Berlin is facilitating genocide in Gaza by arming Israel and demands emergency measures to stop it. Now, South Africa had also earlier brought a genocide case against Israel at the top UN court back in January. Hamas says Nicaragua, South Africa, and similar countries are refusing to close their eyes to the worst crime of the contemporary era taking place in Gaza. The Palestinian resistance movement also called on the ICJ to stop ignoring Israeli atrocities and issue firm decisions to end this campaign of genocide. The Palestinian envoy to the UN, Riyad Mansour, has hailed the Security Council for referring Palestinian full membership application to the Admissions Committee.
We sincerely hope, after 12 years since we changed our status to an observer state, that the Security Council will elevate itself to implementing the global consensus on the two-state solution by admitting the State of Palestine for full membership.
Referrals made by Malta, the current president of the UN Security Council. Malta's UN Ambassador, Vanessa Fraser, says a 15-member committee is expected to make a decision about Palestine status this month. The Russian envoy to the UN, Dmitry Polyansky, also expressed backing for this request. He called on all UN member states to support Palestine's bid for full membership in the UN. Polls from throughout the West continue to show Israel's atrocities in Gaza have had an unprecedented impact. The French President Emmanuel Macron continues to give unconditional support to Tel Aviv, but opinion out on the French streets has shifted towards Palestine since October 7th. Rami Mazahiri has your story out of Paris.
Highly politicized French polling agencies have rarely dared to make surveys on Palestine. But after 6 months of attempted genocide, a new poll shows public opinion dramatically shifting against Israel. Since October, support for Israel's plan to eliminate Hamas has dropped from 65 to 56%, while condemnation for Israel's war aim has jumped from 35 to 44%. Following the mainstreaming of Islamophobia, France had become an ardently pro-Zionist country. But the polls show that a nation evenly split on support for Palestine isn't far away.
Here in France, we have many stars and actors who are Arabs and Muslims, but who don't say a word about Palestine and who don't support the Palestinian cause openly. It's a shame because they could have a big impact on the French public. Instead, they shut themselves up.
Israel est illégitime.
Israel is illegitimate and has no right to exist. Palestine is unjustly occupied, and I don't see how anyone can fail to see that. I'm waiting for Iran and Hezbollah to do their work, and for Israel to get out.
As Palestinians return to the city of Khan Yunis, Gaza's second largest city, the results of 6 months of war are catastrophic. Israel has killed over 33,000 people and wounded 80,000 others in Gaza, the West Bank, and Lebanon. Famine is affecting half of Gaza's 2.2 million people, while some two-thirds of the nation's buildings have been reduced to rubble.
Vraiment, il faut que cette guerre-là, elle cesse.
This war really has to stop. People are forgetting that the Palestinians are humans, just like everyone else. There are just horrible things going on for women and children, and there has to be peace immediately.
After 6 months, the United Nations Human Rights Council finally took a position on the horrific invasion. They called for a halt in all arms sales to Israel and for Israel to be held accountable for possible war crimes and crimes against humanity. Many attribute the Western public's shift against Israel not to the mainstream media or brave politicians, but to the gruesome and heartbreaking images being relayed on social and alternative media. Images of the human costs of the West's support for Tel Aviv have long been censored. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
For 16th night in a row now, thousands of Jordanians have gathered outside the Israeli embassy in Amman to slam the regime's genocide in Gaza. Protesters expressed support for Palestinians and resistance groups and reiterated their demand for an immediate ceasefire. They also called on the Jordanian government to cancel its peace treaty with the Tel Aviv and close the regime's embassy in Amman. Jordan, which hosts over 2.4 million Palestinian refugees, has witnessed numerous pro-Palestine rallies since Israel launched its onslaught on Gaza on October 7th. Protesters have at times faced a crackdown by Jordanian security forces who fired tear gas, made arrests, and left several people injured. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight. The European Union Environment Agency is saying countries across Europe should be prepared for catastrophic risks, ranging from floods to deadly heat waves, as worsening climate change hits every part of their economies and societies. We take a look at some of the World Press and Media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The European Environment Agency, the EEA, has said in its first risk assessment, Europe is not prepared for the rapidly growing climate risk that it faces. From wildfires burning down homes to violent weather straining public finances, the report says more action is needed to address half of the 36 significant climate risks with potentially severe consequences that it identifies for Europe. The report says five more risks need urgent attention. Lina Ilamononen, the EEA's executive director, said, "Our new analysis shows that Europe faces urgent climate risks that are growing faster than our societal preparedness." The report looks at how severe the climate threats are and how Europe is to deal with them. It says the most pressing risks, which are growing worse as fossil fuel pollution heats the planet, are heat stress, flash floods and river floods, the health of coastal and marine ecosystems, and the need for solidarity funds to recover from disasters. When the researchers reassessed six of the risks for southern Europe, which they described as a hotspot region, they found urgent action was also needed to keep crops safe and to protect people, buildings and nature from wildfires. Robert Biesbroek, a report author from Wageningen University in the Netherlands, who also co-led the chapter on Europe in the latest Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report on adaptation, said, "There is increasing evidence of adaptation, but it's certainly not enough." Robert Biesbroek said, "It's not going quickly enough and it's not reaching the ones that need it most. It's quite scary in that sense." The report also warns of cascading and compounding risks, which it says current stress tests in the financial sector are likely to underestimate. For instance, hot weather will dry out southern Europe, killing crops and shrinking water supplies, but will also harden soils, making flash floods more likely and dry out vegetation, meaning wildfires can spread faster in southern Europe. Governments trying to respond to several crises will be more stretched for resources, as will communities that fail to prepare. Blaz Koenig, the head of the European Environment Agency's Impacts and Adaptation Group, said, "The risks are simply outpacing the developments of policies." Europe has heated up more than any other continent since the Industrial Revolution. It has heated about twice as fast as the global average, as carbon dioxide has clogged the atmosphere and trapped sunlight. The researchers looked at two possible scenarios of low and high warming over the century. They did not consider potential tipping points in the climate system, arguing that the effects of such dramatic changes would unfold over longer time periods, and so did not change the urgency of action in the short term. Daniela Schmidt of Bristol University, who sat on the advisory board of the report but was not involved in writing of the report, said, "The geographical granularity that the report offered was important, but questioned whether another report on risk was needed." She said, "Will it increase the action? Will it make people more ready to have more information about what those key risks for us are looking like?" Daniela Schmidt, who also co-led the chapter on Europe for their Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report on adaptation said people should understand that governments, cities and individuals had agency to reduce risks, and that actions to do so would come with benefits such as cleaner air and better housing. She said, "How can we facilitate that people know they have the power to do something?" The European Commission said it would present a communication on managing climate risk recently. The European Environment Agency report says several climate risks have already reached critical levels. It says if decisive action is not taken now, most climate risks could reach critical or catastrophic levels by the end of this century. Lena Ilamanonen said this should be the final wake-up call. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The European Union Environment Agency said on Monday, 11th of March, countries across Europe should prepare for catastrophic risks ranging from floods to deadly heat waves as worsening climate change hits every part of their economies and societies. The Copenhagen-based body said in its first Europe-wide analysis of climate-related risks, policymakers need to draw up new plans to address the challenges ahead. The European Environment Agency said Europe is the world's fastest warming continent, heating up at twice the global average. Even if countries manage to slow global warming, global temperatures are already more than 1 degree Celsius higher than pre-industrial times. The European Environment Agency said the damage will depend in part on whether policymakers act now to prepare societies, for example, by improving insurance coverage, redesigning infrastructure, and introducing laws to protect outdoor workers from deadly heat. Without more urgent action, the European Environment Agency said most of the 36 climate risks facing Europe could hit critical or catastrophic levels this century. They include risks to health, crop production, and infrastructure. In a pessimistic scenario, by the end of the century, the European Environment Agency said hundreds of thousands of people would die from heat waves, and economic losses from coastal floods alone could exceed 1 trillion euros per year. That would far exceed the 650 billion euros lost to weather and climate-related extremes across the European bloc from 1980 to 2022. Kate Levick, Associate Director of climate think tank E3G, urged governments to respond to the European Environment Agency's findings. Kate Levick said, "There's a particular role for finance ministers to essentially look at what happens to balance sheets in terms of assets and liabilities at national level as a result of climate risk." The European Commission will publish its response to the report in the coming days. According to a draft European Commission communication seen by Bloomberg News Agency, Europe stands to suffer significant economic effects amounting to some 7% of its output by the end of the century, even if the world manages to contain the increase of global temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. The European Environment Agency's report argues that climate change will be even more acute in southern Europe, including Greece, with the average temperature in the continent rising by a considerable 3 degrees Celsius in the scenario of a global rise by 1.5 degrees Celsius. The blueprint further warns that in case global warming exceeds 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, the impact will be even more dramatic, with the European Union economy standing to lose some 2.4 trillion euros from its gross domestic product between 2031 and 2050.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is IRIB English Radio. Here is Viewpoints. I'm Hadi Saravi, your host. In the history of mankind, there are people who want to oppress others. In the society or all around us, we can find examples of it. Sometimes we fight back, sometimes we quit. But what do you do if you are told to give up your country? In today's episode, we are going to talk about a nation who were told to leave, but instead stayed and fought back and suffered and lots of other things happened. Still stayed for more than 70 years. And today, after these many years, their voices are beginning to be heard. Today, we talk about a nation of courage and sacrifice, Palestine. Let's welcome our guests. Dear brother Ali, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, this is awesome to have you here with us. And Dr. Rouhani, like always, welcome.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Yeah, this is great to have you here. We are seeing that the different incidents are happening in the world. People from Palestine have returned stronger than before. And they're fighting back. Do you think, let me ask it in this way. Should they continue this way? I mean, so many people are being killed.
Yeah.
Shouldn't sit together, isn't it time to sit together and talk and... Or losing lives is the only way?
Well, this is a good question, bro. Look, when a right is being violated, then the only way to take back your right is to defend and is to try your best. Mm-hmm. In the last 8 decades, I can say, or 7 or 8 decades, we saw that, I mean, people tried different ways. So those who were afraid of, for example, they're being killed, I mean, they tried to reach to a sort of compromise. Mm. Some different ways have been experienced. But I think from the day one, the issue of resistance should have come up with this mentality and this solution. I mean, if they are after a peaceful solution, the solution has been already set. That is,
you know,
the
I mean,
real inhabitants and original inhabitants.
Yeah, sometimes you start fighting.
Now that everything is over, I mean, everything has been lost, I think the only way to take back your own right is to resist. I mean, yes, you might give something, but you will take your own right back. Look, we have something in traditional medicine, which is called hijama. Hijama means to take some portion of blood for your own body. But this hijama actually guarantees your health.
I know. I understand what you're talking about. But the point is that sometimes you see that you're losing everything and you're gaining, maybe you don't gain something now.
Why maybe? For sure you will gain. Where this maybe has come
from. So this
from.
Is it.
Definitely.
So I want you to talk about it.
Look, bro, in the issue, in the story of the Battle of Badr, the number of Muslims were 313, right?
Mm.
By the other side, the infidels, how many they were? Almost 10 to 12,000.
Okay.
So they could say by themselves, maybe we miss, maybe we get defeated. So it's not rational to stand in front of them.
Okay.
But right after the battle, when Muslims actually won, the Holy Prophet ask the captives, not all those who have been killed, ask the captives, how did you see Muslims in your eyes? They were saying that we saw every one of you with many people behind them, right? Mm-hmm. The same thing happened in the story of Talut and Jalut. The number were also 313, and the other side, more than 4,000 something, right? But what happened? Who was the winner of the game at the end of the day? Look, Allah's promise is there. كَمْ مِنْ فَأَةٍ قَلِيلٍ غَلَبَتْ فَأَةٍ كَثِيرًا.
Of course.
So don't look at your number, which is very few, but look at Allah's promise when He promised in case that you step ahead for Allah's sake, Allah will compensate for you, and Allah will help you.
Okay.
Allah will assist you. You don't need to get frustrated. In our ideology, we have no place for hopelessness because we fully trust in Allah's promise, right? Mm-hmm. So we can trust Allah's promise in this way. Even if you are killed, it is ahdal husnain. That is, we are prosperous.
So you mean when you are when with these bloodshed, with these, I mean, we are seeing children are being killed, and this is not a very, you know, something that everyday like.
Yeah.
Babies are killed. You know, this is happening right now.
True.
And then you consider all these gains.
Look, bro. Even we are not going to be afraid of, for example, kids being killed. This is very dreadful for us. We see our kids are being killed daily, on a daily basis. But this is not something that we get frightened from.
Uh-huh.
Look, even look, this Ahd al-Husnain concept, which is a Quranic concept.
Okay.
Even if we are killed and martyred, this is a prosperity for us, right, bro?
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, even if we are killed, but we are gaining, I mean, what is, even, look, with this mature calculations, Imam Hussein was a loser in the game, right?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, okay.
Look, because Imam Hussein got killed,
mm-hmm.
right? But yeah. Whose name is now very high, Hussein or Yazid?
You mean more famous in the world?
And we have seen the kid of Imam Hussein, a six-month child of Imam Hussein was killed.
Okay.
So could we say, okay, Hussein, your kids, your family members are being killed.
Okay.
Stop it.
Uh-huh.
Right? So we take the lessons from that story and mm-hmm. we are going to implement that story in our real life today. For that number of people, for example, who were, for example, altogether 72 people, 18 from his family were killed.
Okay.
So could we say such a thing to Hussein?
Okay, this is, you know, something we can think about at least.
So it's good for us as a Muslim, ideologically, we need to trust whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala told us. His assistance is there, is with us. We need to step in Allah's way.
Uh-huh. So this is it. You have to have a belief, a very confirmed one, and then start taking actions and fight for your beliefs. And sometimes you have to sacrifice.
You might be saying, okay, why should we go directly to this solution? This was the first day solution, brother, but we postponed it. But we have even tried those, peaceful solutions that comes from the Western side. But did they work out? At the end or not? We didn't see any outcome from that.
Mm-hmm.
All these 8 decades, almost, they tried to deceive people. And they gave them nothing. Now look at the map of the Palestine.
Okay.
What is the portion of Palestinians, the original Palestinians in that map? So it decreases day by day. And they are getting limited day by day.
It gets smaller and smaller.
So, they have already gone for the solutions that you're talking about, bro.
No. Okay.
Right? But there is no, there was no result and no consequence in that.
Yeah, this is, exactly what you mentioned is very important, and that was very well said. But I would like to, something that comes to my mind, and I would like to ask this from Dr. Rouhani. Is it right to say it in this way? Correct me if I'm wrong. That sometimes you believe in something, and it's a very confirmed and very something that is rooted in your heart, and you believe in it, and it's something in accordance with Allah's way. So you step in this road, and this road sometimes you lose, and sometimes sometimes you have to sacrifice everything, and then you have to wait and see what happens.
It has at least two different kind of aspects. You know, if you are in a normal situation, normal conditions, Of course, you have to have some pre-planned kind of things. You have to have fully preparation. You have to first empower yourself, facilitate your people, and let's say prepare whatever you need, improve and perfect all things that you need. This is in a normal situation, normal conditions, you have to do this way. But if you are not in normal condition, if this is a kind of emergency kind of situation and condition that you have no any other way except to sacrifice. Here, of course, we are not deciding about the people of Palestine. They themselves will decide what to do. But if they are, we just say if and if. If there is an emergency kind of situation, that there is no any other solution, there is no any other room for doing any other thing, the only way is to sacrifice yourself. Of course, here, then the people might decide. The sacrifice will be resistance. The last decision. Yeah, resistance, of course, will get some sacrifice, as we see now, for example, thousands of people killed. And many, let's say, places, the buildings were destroyed completely. You know, of course, these are the disastrous aspects of war always. But it seems that for the Palestinians, again, this is the solution, that, of course, if they can find some peaceful kind of solution to their problems, of course, they would do. They will decide. But if not, of course, if there's no any other way, then what can one do, you know, if there's no any other case? In the story of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn, it said for Abu Abdullah, there was no any other choice. Finally, he decided to do that, because he called upon all the companions, all the elites, all, let's say, the great scholars, ulamas, but no one listened to Abu Abdullah, and of course, finally, he decided to do that. That's and why it depends. It depends on what kind of situation you are.
And these kind of sacrifice has its own personality and characters.
Of course,
and
it has
know,
its
not
game,
many people
you know?
Are like this, and not many people understand it. It's Ashura, the great day.
You know, if you go back to the history, I can very briefly mention the story of Pharaoh. You know, Pharaoh killed all the kids and the babies were born in that specific time, you know, to stop the spreading of religion, of divine teachings in the whole, in the world. But what happened later is that Moses, the prophet Moses, was raised up in the house of Pharaoh by his wife.
It means no matter how hard you try.
I mean that we should be always hopeful. That even if all the babies were killed by Pharaoh, but the result was this, that Moses became the prophet and it was Pharaoh finally defeated.
And years after that, this truth has been known.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And this is it was a great round of discussion. I wish we could talk about it more. Success is counted sweetest by those who never succeed. To comprehend the nectar requires sorest needs. As he defeated dying, in whose forbidden ear the distant strains of triumph burst agonized and clear. That's all the time we have. Don't forget to tune in next time. I wish the mighty Allah bless you and bless your souls and your hearts. Farewell, everyone.
Tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish. Years, 30 days. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So, the ulama that are Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. Dear listeners, in this episode of this Ramadan series, we are going to focus on Ayah 104 of Surah An'am of the Noble Quran. This ayah is about insight and deep realization of religion and requirements of time and age. Stay tuned, please. The days of the blessed month of Ramadan are the best opportunity to contemplate on ourselves and the philosophy and meaning of life with regards to the circumstances of modern world. Definitely, improvement and perfection in every human aspect requires full awareness and information on the path to move in. God says in Ayah 104 of Surah An'am of the Noble Quran, "Certainly insights have come to you from your Lord, so whoever sees it is to the benefit of his own soul, and whoever remains blind, it is to its detriment. Some of the great lexicographers of Arabic language believe that the word basirat, insight, is the belief of heart in a religious issue or a reality. Some others have described it as a smartness and admonition. The commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him, says in Nahjul Balagha, "Indeed, an insightful person is he who hears and thinks, looks and attains foresight, then is admonished, so moves in the clear path and avoids falling in precipice." If one is insightful, he will be able to see near and far environs, just as we should be careful not to fall in precipice and traps in spiritual and social affairs too. We have to take care not to be deceived or go astray. Once a man called Ishaq ibn Ammar came to the 16th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, and told him, "I have a neighbor who performs prayer a lot, helps the needy, and goes on Hajj pilgrimage very much. I have not seen any wrong from him. What kind of person is he in your opinion?" Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, asked him, "How is his insight?" The man answered, "He's not that aware and has no insight in religion." The Imam answered instantly, "So he will not gain high rank with these worships either." An insightful person can recognize various currents and encounter them vigilantly. He can discern the plots of enemies and choose his duty towards them. God says in the Quran that faith is the most important factor to attain insight. Insight is the means to differentiate between good and evil, between right and wrong. God-wariness strengthens insight and helps the person to act smartly and wakefully. He will thwart the plots of enemies. The father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, had an exemplary insight due to his God-wariness. When he was on exile in Neufchâtel Château, in the outskirts of Paris, he would not accept private meetings with various personalities, saying, "We have no private place." He used to hold meetings with several persons to witness the whole meeting so that no word would be decreased or increased to the talks. This is what today is happening through compound war and media war. This is called media literacy and considered as a part of insight. Therefore, insight is like having eye in confrontation of various events. Mas'ud Rajavi, head of the MKO terrorist grouplet, asked for a meeting with Ayatollah Beheshti, who was the judiciary chief in early 1980s. Ayatollah Beheshti accepted his request. Rajavi announced in a meeting that the MKO members were ready to pay allegiance with Ayatollah Beheshti, provided that he accepts their conditions. Martyr Beheshti told him, "Our difference with you is not a superficial difference. It is rather a deep difference originated in basic beliefs. My argument for you is that you don't even know Marxism." Then he read out part of Karl Marx's book, Capital, German, and translated it. He said to Rajavi, "If you refer to the original German book, you will notice that there are many fundamental mistakes in definition of Marx's economy. You have mixed principles under with the name of Islamic economy and Marxist economy and have found your ideology on this basis. This, while you should have recognized, acted, promoted, and explicated Islam according to its own principles." This very erroneous perception of Islam caused MKO terrorists to murder over 17,000 innocent people in terrorist operations, most of whom were ordinary men, women, and children. One of the most indelible stains in the MKO record was the terrorist blast in which Ayatollah Beheshti and over 70 of the companions of Imam Khomeini were martyred. The more one reflects on the ayahs of the Qur'an and the statements of the Prophet and his infallible progeny, the more he or she will gain insight and the power to analyze events and conditions. We are duty-bound to think deeply on various events and affairs. This will help us to come to a clear conclusion instead of being trapped in hollow and poor analysis. Weak analysis has been the pitfall of many societies and personalities throughout history. Zulkela was among the companions of Imam Ali, peace upon him, but owing to lack of insight, he was deviated and joined Muawiyah's camp and then became one of his commanders. Although he was fighting in front of falsehood, he thought that he was struggling for God and defending truth. Seeing the Prophet's loyal companion, Ammar Yasir, Zulkela remembered the words of the Prophet when he said, "Ammar will be killed by a rebellious lot." This was going to shake him and that of the many of the deceived forces in Muawiyah's camp as they could see Ammar on the other side. When Muawiyah noticed this hesitation among his camp, he immediately answered Zulkela, "Who knows whether Ammar will stay with Ali and not join us?" Lack of insight and deep ignorance caused Zulkela to be convinced and stay with the rebel, Muawiyah. He was killed. Ammar was martyred after him to clarify the truthfulness of the Prophet and rightfulness of Imam Ali and his companions. Muawiyah was happy as Zulkela was killed before Ammar because he knew well that had he seen Ammar's martyrdom, half of the Muawiyah's troops would have joined Imam Ali. This is ignorance and stupidity which extinguishes the light of insight.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The mayor of Gaza's Al-Maghazi refugee camp and scores more civilians are the latest victims of Israel's campaign of genocide, as overall death toll rises past 33,000.